darkly splendid abodes. The official podcast of Toronto the Libre. Exploring, if you will, practical philosophy. From science and the workings of the mind to spirituality, esotericism, and magic. Stooping down, dipping my wings, I came into the darkly splendid abodes. The Book of the Law proclaims also reason is a lie, for there is a factor infinite and unknown. What is this infinite and unknown factor, and how does it undermine the faculty of reason? Edward Mason and I will discuss this apparently ineffable concept as we skirt the pit of because and flirt with the dogs of reason. In this, the final episode of our third season. Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law.
Love is the law. Love under will.
It's kind of nice to have you actually in person for once, partially just because of the fact that when we're talking over each other, we're not going to experience weird artifacts happening in the audio here.
No, strange squawks and squeaks are not going to happen today.
Yeah.
Unless you invoked something last night and you didn't warn me about it.
Or I could open the window here.
You could open the window, yes.
But yeah, welcome to Canada.
Thank you, sir.
Well, welcome back to Canada.
Welcome back to Canada, yes.
It's a couple of times a year you're still visiting and that sort of thing.
Exactly, yes. So today I wanted to talk about a subject that I said I would call infinite and unknown. That comes from, I think, verse 32 of chapter 2 of the Book of the Law. For there is a factor infinite and unknown, and all their words are skew-wise. And this was impossible to write. Usually I draft up some words and I'm checking as I talk with you. And each time I tried to put down what I wanted to say, the meaning slipped away and the words just didn't refer to it.
That sounds appropriate.
Well, what we're talking about, or I'm talking about, is essentially Hermes.
Hmm.
Mercury, you know, Crowley talks about Mercury being absolutely amoral. He or it isn't necessarily looking out for your welfare in any way that you would consider appropriate. Yes, there's a big long-term goal in mind and you're eventually going to get there, but it's a long road to it. One of the things is, I think I should mention, often the standard tree of life with the ten sephiroth is referred to as the sword. You can see the hilt of the sword right up there at Kephah and the point of the blade coming out at Malkuth. It's like the lightning flash coming down into the material plane. That's fixed. Swords are rigid. The way of the path of return is a serpent. It winds over all those 22 connecting paths all the way up, plus a few hidden ones that aren't ever mentioned except in secret cabals over a decent bottle of wine. Something that came to me, you know, some months ago was a kind of a, well, I'll call it a realization. My whole life had been following a particular serpentine path. I could see that that was there, but there was no way that in my diary I could put down facts about it, because each phase of my life had been like one of the curves of that serpent going up the tree. And I think this is the thing that we begin to discover as we get into Thelema in a, you know, serious way, that when you read the books, you know, say you read about the grades of AA, okay, you're going to start as a student, then go into a probationer for a year, then you do your neophyte year, and so on and so on. And it's all step by step. You are living a life, but also secretly becoming, you know, one of the masters of the universe, and you hit Tiferet after X number of years. Knowledge and conversation of the Holy Guardian Angel comes about at this point. And then you simply, you know, carry on until you're ready to hop over the abyss in one mighty bound. And it's all planned out. It's all specific. The fact is that when you get into this, the weirdness of the experience of actually consciously working a path is what eventually overwhelms you. And this is the way that the Holy Guardian Angel, through the lens of Mercury, it's got, you know, many lenses, is actually communicating with us and guiding us. And that's where the words start to fall aside. What exactly do you mean? And I go, well, because it is so very strange. The whole process interweaves itself into every aspect of your regular life. I mean, we're all warned that this is going to happen, that, you know, this is going to change who and what you are, your relationship to yourself, your relationship to other people, your relationship ultimately to whatever you can understand of the universe. But when that actually starts to come about, it doesn't follow that nice, simple, step-by-step ladder that you think you're going to get into. Mm-hmm. I will do this grade for so many months or years, and then I will hop on to the next stage. I will get examined and passed by my instructor. Or if you're doing the Temple of the Silver Star system that I follow, which is basically a Thelemicized Golden Dawn process, it's degrees, and you're working from a lower starting point, but you have the sense of moving faster simply because it isn't quite as challenging as AA. You find yourself moving through in ways that you just wouldn't have anticipated, and the weird stuff that comes to you, life changes, in positive and negative interactions with people that seem to be taking you off the path, you look back eventually and think that was the path. Mm. I mean, the term path is always a bit cliche. It's what Crowley despised in Theosophists. They said they were on the path while they sat around drinking cups of cheap tea. But that's, we don't have really another good term for it. It's a trackless path. You can't actually see the marks except in your own diary and whatever certificates your teacher gives you along the way. But there is this strangeness to what actually happens that is so absolutely unique to each person that it can't really be described in any concrete terms. A further thing that's rather serpentine, I find, is that Thelemites tend to move around. A lot of people, you know, will find a home and they stay there for 28 years, same house, same town, they haven't been anywhere else. Not everybody, but large numbers of people move about all over the place. You know, I know American Thelemites who've been in 8 or 10 different states ever since they got initiated. Mm-hmm. States politically, I don't mean states of consciousness. Similarly, I started in England, spent most of my life here in Toronto or around Toronto, very brief interval early on in the US for a few months. And for the past few years, I've been in Mexico. There were always economic and commonsensical reasons for each of the moves that I've made. At the same time, there was always this other strange thing putting me into situations where I would have particular kinds of interaction with people. Even during a long interregnum between an early effort to illuminate myself with one small group of people, and long before I got into Thelema explicitly, something was pushing me through step by step without my really noticing this, because it all seemed like random events. When you look back, you realize that your life was this summation of random events. And that is why, or one of the reasons why, it is so difficult when people say, well, what do you mean about this knowledge and conversation? What is this holy guardian angel thing? You just kind of go, well, you have to find out. No one can actually tell you what your particular way of coming to this thing is going to be. Mm-hmm. The high-profile people just went straight through the formal system. They applied themselves very skillfully and with great dedication and got to phase X very rapidly. A lot of us kind of stumble along and find ourselves wondering, you know, did I make a mistake? Which is very important. You should have a phase where you think, I've made a mistake with this Thelema stuff. It's all crap. It's all silly. It's all overblown. You know, you can find 500 different reasons to object to it. It's quasi-fascistic. It's just based on some very tenuous ideas, etc., etc.
It's just silly.
It's just silly. the silly factor is a key thing about Thelema. And if you haven't looked at it in that light, then you have a problem. If you can't grasp the absurdity of this. And again, that is what Mercury brings you to, this sense of this is dumb. Mercury plays tricks, as everyone knows. He's got this, he's identified with the trickster figure. You know, an example from being in Mexico, I'm driving an extremely ancient Ford Explorer. And of course, it has to break down miles from where anyone else is going to be coming in the next few hours. What do you do? And it's only when you look back and think what you had to do in order to find somebody to fix the car and get it out of the mess, as well as, you know, take care of yourself, that you realize that was the educational process that particular day.
Mm-hmm.
Mercury has, you know, he gets his own jokes. The rest of us just have to try and laugh along with him at the end of it. But it's this sheer oddity, this sheer strangeness. There is a factor that is infinite that you can't appreciate because it is infinite, and it's unknown because you can't know it while it's happening unless you have gone very, very far down the path and have really become a highly illuminated man of God,
mm-hmm.
or woman or person or whatever designation you choose.
I remember the idea of angels and working with angels being described as, you've got your perspective, which is sort of like being down on the ground in a big traffic jam. And then you've got the angel's perspective. And when you're collaborating with them, they've got a sort of bird's eye view on things where it's like they can get the overall picture of what's going on and where the traffic jam is caused and, you know, what you're looking at overall. And it makes me think of that, where this idea of the infinite factor that's infinite and unknown is, yeah, it's outside of your perspective, and your right place is in this perspective, you know, as opposed to having some expectation of being able to grasp that infinite and unknown to some extent.
That's absolutely true. It's a very good analogy. You know, we're all in this traffic jam. Where am I going? Why am I held up, etc., etc.? Why can't I just go where I want to go to? At the same time, I think there begins to come a phase where this, what we call yetziratic perspective, the next level up, which is the level of the angels, begins to open for us. And it's not that you can understand it. With a traffic jam, you can say, okay, there's construction, or there's a blocked road, or there's an accident. You know there are empirical causes for this, or it's rush hour and there's just too much traffic. But you can at least sit there being frustrated, knowing that there's a specific cause for this.
Mm-hmm.
When you're looking at things from the yetziratic level, there's a necessity factor there. And the necessity factor is completely different in its criteria to anything we are doing in our everyday life, driving around or walking around or just living ordinary life. And there's a point where you've moved from traffic jam driver status to being able to include some of that yetziratic formulation.
Mm-hmm.
Knowing that you can't really explain this to anyone else who's not come close to the same thing, and knowing, of course, that ultimately beyond that yetziratic level of stuff, there is also briatic consciousness, the creative world, which is actually where this knowledge and conversation stuff starts to coalesce for you, and you begin to see the whole picture as something integrated, even if you can't understand why or how that is so. You just begin to accept that there is a pattern, which is where you kind of forgive Mercury, because you somehow have a sense of the necessity of what has happened. That's what really becomes, so I'm told, really clear to people when they finally get to be masters of the temple. The necessity of how and why things are appears to them. And that's the point where maybe our masters of the temple can gossip with each other, but they can never explain it to anyone of the rest of us why it's necessary. Because most of your life, you're protesting against, did it have to be this difficult? Did I have to wait for 40 minutes in that lineup because somebody in front of me was arguing? Did I have a panicky thing getting to the airport because there was traffic, etc., etc.? And yet this whole life pattern is getting woven together for this total experience. And only when you can begin to grasp the aspects of the totality of this, and you realize totality is expressing itself through your individual localized performance in life, that it starts to, you know, all of this occult stuff you've been doing forever finally begins to make a certain amount of sense. Now, the catch is, if you could only explain that to somebody. And Crowley tries so often, so hard, in so many of his writings to explain these things. You can't understand the explanation until you've actually had an experience of it. So you have to just go on a kind of blind faith all the way through.
Yeah, it kind of seems like you're stuck with allegories to some extent, because you're like, he can use an allegory or it can give an example of his own experience. But I mean, if he was able to work with you one-on-one, based on your personal experiences, maybe you could get a little bit closer. But either way, you're right. It's just kind of like you just have to, you have to walk the road to,
you have to walk the road. Yeah. And, you know, anyone listening to this is going to think, yeah, okay, tell me something new.
Yeah.
But I think it's important to appreciate that it is a very strange experience being an initiate. Not a bad, strange experience. And it is absolutely unique to you. There has to be your own road to it. That is the way that you begin to recognize more about this true will thing, that in fact it's going on all the time behind the scenes. And you're trying to understand what it is, identify with it, and include it consciously. But you'll never be able to explain entirely to anybody else quite what you were doing and why. Mm-hmm. As I say, all I've noticed is this moving around thing that people do. We need to come and have more experiences. And if we stay too long in one place, unless there's a lot of stimulus happening and a lot of activity in areas that don't require mobility, we end up moving home and we end up moving countries and we end up moving cities, just because there needs to be this, let's try something different and something you were not expecting.
Mm-hmm.
Let's then draw out more reactions from you. Let's have you look at your reactions. That's the key thing. And let's see what you can eventually appreciate for the totality of what's happened over an extended period of time.
Yeah, I guess the moving aspect, the idea of the moving, is the simplest way of kind of exemplifying sort of the salve, like applying an acid that breaks down the structures that allows you to kind of shake things up and then reintegrate them again as you're moving into a new place or that sort of thing.
Yes, unfortunately. that has to happen, or we start getting fixed ideas. We start thinking we've worked out the answers. And of course, what we're doing is something that has no definitive answers. You're always moving on to the next stage, the next phase, which initially is going to be quite distressing. Let me give you a quick example. Flying here, I thought, you know, I haven't read Crowley's 8 lectures on yoga a couple of years. I'll read it on the plane. And normally I find that a really fun piece. I mean, he was giving these talks in this restaurant in London and he's making all these outrageous jokes. And it's fun. It's fizzy. I've always told people, look, if you want to get a sense of what this Thelema stuff's about, try the 8 lectures. This time, I think I finally understood some of the things he was saying about being drawn to the shadow side of things and including that in your perspective. Mm-hmm. And I went from Mexico City to Houston and got off the plane incredibly depressed, realizing, man, what I have not done in my own career here. You know, I'm beginning to see something about what he's saying that I'd never appreciated before. Now, how many times have I read the book? 10, maybe 12. It was something that I used to read almost every year because there'd be a dull phase of life, and I just find it perked me up. This time it was really completely depressing thought of, my gosh, this guy really went so damn far, and I've only come, you know, a little bit of the way down this road. Mm-hmm. And of course, you have to then tell yourself, yes, but I did come that far down the road.
Yeah.
And that's important to appreciate, that you're always coming to the beginning. Wherever you are, you're just coming to the beginning.
It's constantly an initiation in the sense of initiating something.
Constantly initiating something and appreciating that everything you've done is a bit partial.
Mm-hmm.
Again, the eight lectures, Crowley talks a lot about, you know, when you sit down to meditate, that's when you really encounter the sheer amount of obstruction mm-hmm. from the subconscious, which is not actually the enemy, but rather it's all these bits of ourselves that are trying to include themselves in our total understanding. But they come up in this very disorganized or seemingly disorganized form. Normally in a day-to-day life, we just create a hierarchy of priorities of what we've got to do. And so it seems like all of these urges are more or less contained. They're a bit like walking a dog on the leash. It wants to run after the other dog, or it wants to run after the motorbike, but you've got it on a leash, so it can't get away very far. Once you sit down to meditate, you've left all the leashes locked in a cupboard upstairs, and all the bits and pieces come out and start going kind of crazy. And getting through to the point where everything goes still or calm, or you get a positive result, that can take a lot of time. And again, to quote what Crowley says, you have no idea how bored you can be meditating or trying to meditate. Once you actually get into the result that you're actually aiming at, all kinds of amazing stuff can happen.
Mm-hmm.
But the number of times when you just sit down and it's like, well, I can't stay here too long because I promised I'd meet somebody this afternoon. And, oh, maybe I should pay the phone bill a bit early this week because I'm going to be busy at the end of the week. And there isn't much for breakfast tomorrow. And it just goes on and on and on. These are all legitimate concerns. Every single one, it will be something to do with your life, actually living your life. And you're trying to become increasingly present in each moment of your life. But with meditation, you're trying to get out of compulsive connection to all of these things and to get them to be silent.
Mm-hmm.
Just so you can actually focus on beingness or non-beingness, you know, choose your own long-winded noun for it. That's the strangeness of the path again. There is the factor infinite, which is what you're aiming for. And until you're actually in the infinite, it remains unknown.
Yeah.
Because you can't know what that is until it actually is happening for you.
Yeah, Michael and I had talked about part two, lecture one of eight lectures on yoga in a recent Deep Dip episode. And one of the things that was interesting that comes up in it is he goes through the different types of breaks, the different categories of breaks. And then I think it's the final break that he talks about, which is the actual result.
Yes.
And the idea of that is kind of interesting, especially with what you're talking about here, because it sort of points out that it's almost like it seems to allude to the idea that the break itself is breaking that which is enforcing the practice, and that which is enforcing the practice is still part of the mind that is meant to subside if that makes sense.
It does if you've tried to do it. Yes, it does make sense. But the whole point of it being a break is whatever you've anticipated that it's going to be, the actuality of it is something much broader, deeper, scarier, more uplifting, just different in every way.
Mm-hmm.
It is hitherto unknown.
Mm-hmm.
I know I keep hammering my title into this, but I'm trying to justify why I'm talking in all these circuitous statements. It just has its own quality that cannot be exactly defined. You can't quite put it down in your diary. I think all of us come up with our own personal jargon mm-hmm. about just what the experience is like each time there is a positive break, a realization of what it is that you're after.
Crowley, in probably a couple of places, alludes to the idea that you can read his writing and recognize when you're moving along the path, you'll recognize certain things where, whether it's in the holy books or just in some of his more prosaic writings, you'll be able to recognize, oh, yes, I can see that we are brother seekers, so to speak, and we've I can see this as kind of a flag post for that's where I've gotten to on this expedition, or you know, see something comparable there. Honestly, I mean, that's sort of when you were speaking earlier about like rereading 8 lectures and being able to get something new out of it that you wish you had have known at an earlier stage of the game or something like that. I feel like that's why Crowley was chosen as the mouthpiece. I mean, he talks about it himself, but it's easy for his own writing on the subject to come off as braggadocio. It's like kind of like just bigging himself up about why he was chosen, because he's got poetic skills and all this sort of thing. But it's like, no, it's true. I mean, his writing, you can keep coming back to it and have a completely different experience of it at a different stage of your own progress, and even progress might be a bit deceptive because it's just a different stage on that expedition that you're on.
Maybe we should own the word progress, because we don't go in for false humility in Thelema. And I think you find a parallel. I don't know much about this one, but I've read Tibetan Buddhists talk about tantric pride. There is a sense of, look, I know stuff, and I'm going to own the fact that I know stuff. Mm. It's not based on the delusion that therefore I am important. Rather, the knowledge is something that operates through me, and that's really cool. Therefore, you know, I'm going to say this is good stuff, and I'm not going to get, well, I hate to say that I have some insight, but I might admit that I've had a bit of insight. Yeah, we're supposed to say, yes, I know stuff. Now, this produces, you know, depending on the person you're talking to, if you talk to someone who's completely outside Thelema or any kind of sort of parallel path, Sufism, Zen, or you know, Raja Yoga or something, they won't know what you mean. If they've actually had a few realizations of their own, there's always this looking for somebody else with whom that they can communicate, simply because you know that each time you have a conversation with somebody else who's also on the path, you're going to get a little bit more perspective on your own drive, your own function and purpose, your own true will, your own you know, the little reminder that, you know, okay, I still have an awful long, long way to go, but man, I've come some distance.
Mm.
And I think owning that is an important part of what we do. We are not told to be, you know, with the keen and the proud, the royal and the lofty, etc., etc., which I always used to look at and think, I'd never make that mistake. But yeah, you need to own the fact that you've understood a few things that make life a bit different. And you also have to accept the fact that to a lot of people that is threatening, because they're feeling, well, how do you know stuff?
Mm. And I guess there's something to be said for just stating a fact or something that seems to be a fact as you understand it regardless, as opposed to using something as some kind of power play or something like that, or just using it as bragging, you know, bragging rights.
Where I live in Mexico, we have a regular discussion group, and I gave a talk on the Tree of Life not long ago. And I thought, you know, it was all going fine because I was making all kinds of little wisecracks along the way, and the people were laughing with me because two or three of them are practicing Buddhists, so you know, they were perfectly secure in the fact that they got something for themselves, and also they were beginning to see, they were kind of, oh, here's a point where your stuff parallels mine. Different set of symbols to getting to the same ultimate thing. One guy, he got very agitated because he strikes me as someone who's had some insights that he doesn't know what to do with. He's never particularly applied himself to one practice for any extended period of time. He got very upset with me. And I'd like to say I handled him with perfect calm and aplomb. I didn't. I lost it. Because he just kept, you know, coming at me, and finally, like, we were all having fun 5 minutes ago. I made little jokes about, you know, this and that, and suddenly, you know, it's gotten very serious. You have to be prepared to disturb people. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they need that. You know, people need to think, oh, there is something else that I could do other than work with the five or six basic ideas that I always keep coming back to. Mm-hmm. There could be a seventh, eighth, or ninth idea that might push several of those lesser ideas out of the way. It's tricky. I mean, you don't want to be someone who has a reputation for being a know-it-all, because then you're just obnoxious and nobody wants to play with you. but you also need to own the fact that, you know, you've learned something. There's something you've got out of Thelema. Whatever bit of what Crowley's taught is there for you, and you think, this I have found to be true. Mm-hmm. There is a true will. Or there is some kind of higher consciousness. Occasionally, whether it was with psychedelics or spontaneous stuff, or maybe a couple of times you did rituals and something opened for you. You know there's something more than just walking around the city, earning a living, feeding yourself, hanging out with your friends. There's something that is completely outside of that order of things. We don't necessarily live in the traffic jam, as you were, to use your earlier metaphor there. And that can be very hard to accept in yourself at first. It can be very hard to appreciate the importance of that perspective of, you know, I'm only on the traffic jam in one sense. There's something else I know beyond this. I can understand that traffic patterns relate to a far greater aspect of existence, about life, about what we're all doing. So people who have that kind of insight need to own it. And the good teachers tell people, you know, where you find someone who's capable of absorbing new information, give them new information. And sometimes that means somebody who's kind of sorta at the stage where they can accept a different idea. It's not, they may interpret it initially as an attack because you are challenging assumptions they've got. You need to do it with empathy. But it can also be something that people will, you know, suddenly a month later they come up to you and, you know, we were talking, you know, last month about X and you said such and such. Now, what they took from what you said is not what you were thinking when you told them something about the idea of true will or the fact that each one of us is an actual manifestation of Nuit, not just a temporary phenomenon that appears, lives and dies and that was it. That in some way what we are is identified with the vaster potentials of the universe. But if something has gone across, then your own strangeness is something that you can offer to people, if only because taking that first step out of consensual thinking is kind of freaky.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got a circle of friends who are already unconventional thinkers, then it can be, you know, not so challenging. I just thought of one neighbor I have in Mexico. He's late 40s, always very cheerful about things. I saw him with his shirt off a few days ago. He'd never even mentioned that he did the Sundance thing, where they put the eagle claws through the flesh of the chest and you get hauled up. He got 5 sets of these. And I thought, okay, this is why you and I always get along, because you know, you've been in a really wild place. Totally different symbol set, totally different set of concepts to get down the road. But you are very definitely trying to get to that point where I think they have to do it 7 times in order to be qualified as sort of a junior shaman. But, you know, he's capable of very flexible thinking because he's realized that the world as it appears is only as it appears. There is far more going on behind the scenes.
And I guess that's one of the nice things about moving around a little bit and shaking things up. So to your point, it seems like a good idea to be able to not just sort of apply the acid to your own structures, but to others as well. And I mean, it's just like in chapter 1 of Liber 65, acid that cuts into steel, as a cancer that utterly corrupts the blood,
yes,
so am I unto the heart of man. I will not stop until I eat it all.
I mean, you know, people look at that and think, oh my God, these people are into the powers of darkness. It's only when you begin to understand what that means, it's like, wow, that would be really cool. You know, I would not be tied down to these nervous conventions that I've always adhered to. I can actually allow myself to include greater visions.
To flow like a mercurial flow, so to speak.
Indeed. Mercurial flow or abrupt stops and starts, because Mercury does all that kind of stuff. But that's part of bringing about the aeon, bringing this aeon into beingness. You, the job is to get rid of old ideas. And a lot of people are understandably scared at the present time of what's happening in the world. Politically, everything in the West is appears to be a complete mess. That might simply be a distortion, because news media are desperate for eyeballs on their websites. Therefore, they will have screaming headlines as much as possible. So we get an impression from our daily browsing that things are more disastrous than they actually might be. Still, there is a need to move to the next step, and the next step after that, and the next step after that. So, yeah, we have to corrupt the steel with our own acid in the nicest and most benign way we can manage.
Or at least the most... I was trying to find the right word for it, but I've got it. I can't find it. I'll have to leave that, and I'll edit that one out.
we'll edit that one out. Or we can just leave it there, because, as I said at the beginning, we'll this stuff is so... You can't pin it down, because this is about breaking down definitions. We define our lives according to, I believe this, I think that, this is my opinion. The whole thing with Thelema is, well, you know, opinions, schminions, you know, never mind what you think right now. What bigger idea could you embrace? What bigger idea would you allow, you know, cue the drum roll, to embrace you? That is where it should get a bit freaky. You're going to find yourself in the, you know, the terra incognita. I have never been here before. The next time you encounter it, well, I have been here before, and you can begin to internalize ideas and perspectives that never came to you previously. As I said earlier, I've been looking at this recently, just seeing that what I thought was a series of episodes in my life. You know, I've had this life, and I've been these different people in different places, in different roles, in different jobs, different relationships. And there was a moment when I could see that it really was all one serpentine thing, line going right through a life. And it's like, wow, that's so freaking cool and so odd. Getting used to oddity is the big thing. And I think this is where, again, people feel occultism's dark because it doesn't offer comfort. Nu is your refuge. Totality is your refuge. Hadith, the light within, is your light. That's it. And whatever protection you get is from this hypothetical union of these two that on the one hand is always there and on the other hand you haven't actually realized yet. And we use that as the grand metaphor for the Holy Guardian Angel in this particular phase of human evolution. But we're very aware that we're in a strange-seeming time, and going through it takes a great deal of patience with ourselves, patience with other people, and appreciation for the fact that the philosophy of Thelema and the actuality of it, it's not just a set of ideas, but there is a genuine current that gets into us and infects the blood, corrupts, you know, the steel, and, you know, what are the other metaphors Crowley uses? He's always talking about poison. We're going to poison all the stuff you've got. And when that actually begins to die from the poisoning, finally you realize you didn't really want it that much anyway. But it is so odd. And I think if there was one key thing I wanted to stay in this talk today, expect oddity in the path. There's no simple, you know, have faith in this, here's the doctrines, here's the dogmas, here's a teacher who will tell you all the answers. No, the teacher will point out where you'll discover the questions. And that's the job, is to get through it in time, at the rate you can. Not, you know, some people surprise me with how long they take. I get surprised at how long I've taken. But people have to go through whatever they're going through in relation to their own lives and their understanding of that, and gradually build up a relationship with what we call a Thelema that is absolutely unique to them. But eventually it does begin to open the windows and let in the light.
Well, great. On that note, this is a nice place to end our... this will be the end of Season 3 on Darkly Splendid Abodes.
Okay, it's been fun being part of this.
Well, thanks so much for joining me in person for the first time on this podcast.
Okay.
93. Thanks for listening. Look for Toronto Thelema on Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Watch for events in the city. And join us again in the Darkly Splendid Abode.